As we start out here, let's first of all just think about our own lives. You know, you cannot really pray effectively for your children unless you're looking inside your own life. And I don't feel that there are certain things that I can ask God to do in the lives of my children if I'm not, first of all, examining my own life. In other words, I can't ask God to do major surgery in the life of my child who has a bad attitude if I am allowing things in my own life that contradict that. It is hard for God to answer that prayer because He really wants me to be a role model first to my children. Philippians 1:27 says, "Let your behavior be worthy of the gospel of Christ." And I like that. Just your manner of life or your behavior. And in Proverbs 31:28, the verse says, "Of the godly woman," or the woman who is walking with God, not the perfect woman. A godly woman is not a perfect woman. It is a woman who is walking with God day by day, not one that doesn't make mistakes. It's one who does make mistakes, but who goes to God for forgiveness and to others, and who looks to God for help. So we need to get out of our thinking that, you know, that God expects us to be absolutely perfect. We're striving toward that, but we're all growing, aren't we, and struggling. And Proverbs 31:28 says, "Her children rise up and call her blessed." Do your children do that? Maybe they just rise up and call you, "Hey, Mom." But, you know, could my children really say that about me? In various ways, they may not say, "Oh, Mom, you're blessed." You know, they wouldn't come out and say that, but they would compliment me maybe in some way. And last night we were with a couple who had one of their children with them, and this child made a comment about his parents that was very complimentary on the way that they had raised him. And I sat there and I thought of that verse, and I thought, that's it. You know, that is beautiful. And that's what we want, isn't it? We want to raise our children and to pray for them and train them in such a way, setting an example in our own lives, so that someday they look back and they just say, you know, Mom and Dad really, really did some right things in the way they raised me. You know, they were loving. They taught me. They prayed for me. They did these things that made the difference in my life. And I'm walking with God today because they did these things for me. Okay, let's take the first one here, how prayer shapes. The first thing is it puts us in a dependent position of looking to God for solutions and not to ourselves. And Psalm 62:5 says, "My soul, wait thou only upon God, for my expectation is from Him." And I don't know about you, it is very easy for me to just naturally come up with ideas and things that I'm going to do. And it's much easier to do that than to come to God and to wait on Him. And yet, if I really want God's direction in my life, I want His help in raising my children, then I have to come to Him. I don't have to. I can do it in my own strength, but then I've got to live with the results of that, and that's not very exciting to me. There have been times where I have done things in my own strength, and I've thought later, you know, why didn't I ask God for His help? Why didn't I look to Him for direction in that? Things would have gone so much better. Relationships would have been smoother. And you learn, don't you? Psalm 121, 1 and 2, that whole psalm is good, but just that first part says, "I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills from whence comes my help." My help comes from the Lord. And we need to ask God to give us this attitude in our hearts, that an attitude of dependence on Him. I remember when we came back from Africa and we moved over here to Pleasant Valley, just on the other side of Glen Eyrie, in that housing development. I remember walking around my living room one morning in prayer and saying to the Lord, "Lord, I have a real flaw in my life. I really am not totally dependent on You. You know, I am still independent, very independent. And I realize there are a lot of things that You would like to do in my life and through my life. If I could just be more dependent on You, and will You please build that quality into my life?" And I really meant business with the Lord. I was tired of me the way I was. I was tired of my independence. And I began to pray that every day for my life, and over a period of weeks and months, I began to gradually notice that there was just more of a dependent spirit on Him. And I think we can you know, where we see a weakness in our lives, we can ask the Lord to build that in. Because that weakness is there, we mustn't ever allow ourselves to say, well, I'm sorry, but that's just me. You know, then we completely stop God from doing anything in that area of our lives. He is just, he's not going to force his way in. And so in this area of dependence, we need to ask God to make that a real conviction in our hearts that we will be dependent on him, and especially in the area of prayer. The second one, prayer enables God to do what he wants to in the lives of our children, which he will not do apart from prayer. Now, it's not that he can't do it. There isn't really anything that God can't do. But I really believe in my heart that there are certain things that God will not do. It's kind of like I have my homework to do and God has his. God is not going to do my homework because he's given that to me to do, and I had better not try to do his. Because I can't. I'm not capable of doing his homework for him. John 16:24 says, up until now you have asked nothing in my name. Ask and you will receive in order that your joy may be full. God wants us to pray so that we can have joy in our lives and that our joy can be complete. You know, isn't it exciting to pray for something and then to see God answer that prayer specifically? It's really exciting to me. I had something I prayed about on my way to the Glen. It was an item of clothing that I needed. And I didn't have time to even look in Norman before we left. I mean, I just was up to there with details. And so I just said, Lord, you know, I don't have time to even look. And I need this certain item of clothing. And I'm going to just pray that somehow you'll give me an opportunity to run in a store somewhere on the way. I just planned to just, you know, run in somewhere. And it didn't work out, and it didn't. And finally, halfway along the trip, God provided that article of clothing for me in a way that was totally unexpected. It took no time on my part. It was just given to me. And it was exactly what I needed. So, he delights to do that for us. My eyes are really getting bad these days. James 4:2-3 says, you do not have because you do not ask. And then it goes on to say, you ask and you do not receive because you ask wrongly in order that you may consume it upon your own lusts. And God wants us to ask, but he wants us to ask in the right way for things. And when we pray for our children, I think too that God wants us to really ask things that are right for them, not things that would make us look good or make us feel better, but things that really are going to be a benefit to the children. And then the third one, if practiced consistently, prayer will definitely shape our children to be Christ's men and women, although they will, in varying degrees, go through deep struggles in the process. And we shouldn't be naive about this. I think we need to expect our children to go through struggles. Some children go through more than others. When I grew up, I did not go through a rebellious time against my parents. You know, they're really, that just wasn't the sort of thing that I went through. Now, our older two children did go through a time like this. And when this came, it really startled me. And I found myself thinking, you know, wait a minute. My relationship with my folks has been good, especially my mother. Why is this happening to me? And it was difficult for me to understand. But we don't know what God has to do in the lives of our children in order to bring them to the end of themselves, to where they will really be dependent on him. And I think we need to be willing for the process. Boy, you know, you just want that product, don't you? You want that end result. And you want to push all these buttons and get that end result. Just very simply, if I do this, 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 and this, then this will result. But you can't do that with children. It's totally unpredictable. You cannot push certain buttons and then have it happen just that way. You really are cast on God. But James 5:16 says, the effective, fervent prayer of a righteous person avails much. And remember this, that your prayers will make a great deal of difference. I have to admit, as I look back when I was living over here in Pleasant Valley and my children were in junior high and high school, that there were times when I found myself thinking, and I know it was Satan feeding these thoughts into my mind, but I would find myself thinking, you know, what difference is it making? I've had these prayer lists for years. I've prayed faithfully for my children. I've prayed specifically. I've tried to walk with God as best I know how. I've made mistakes, but I've tried. And, you know, they're going through these difficult things. And really, what difference is it making? They're no different than the kids down the block. You know, and I know it was the devil just saying, ha, you know, what difference is it making? You're wasting your time. It's not working. And then there would be kind of that still, small voice that would say to me, not audibly, but I would just sense it in my heart, hang in there. Don't get discouraged. The last chapter has not been written. Just hang in there. And I know that was the Lord. He was encouraging me. And you have to go through those difficult times. When you go through them, and God brings that child to the end of himself or herself, and he does a real work in their lives, you know, something very interesting happens. That child's relationship to you is closer than it ever was before. There's something about struggle that does deepen relationships. As long as you don't give up on that child. Now, there may be times when you find yourself thinking, I know I'm supposed to love this child, but I certainly don't feel loving. You know, I feel anything but loving toward this child. And that's true. That's normal. We have those feelings. But deep down in our hearts, we do love the child. We do care, and that's why we hurt when they go through difficult situations. Mary, Queen of Scots, said, I fear the prayers of John Knox more than all the armies of England. I wonder if anyone's afraid of my prayers. I wonder if my prayer life is that fervent, and especially for our children. I don't know how many of you are familiar with a passage in 2 Chronicles, chapter 20. I love this story because it's about King Jehoshaphat and how that armies were coming against him, great multitudes were coming against him, and he didn't know what to do. He looked at his kind of puny little army, and it was no match for those who were coming against him. And so he did the right thing, though. You know what he did? He turned to God. He didn't panic and send some spies out to other nations to ask for help, you know, for other troops like some of the other kings did. But he got his people together and he prayed and he completely cast himself on God. And starting with about verse 12, we'll kind of skip through here. He says, O our God, wilt thou not execute judgment upon them, the enemies that were coming against them? And let me just say right here that as you're raising children, there will be times where you really feel like the task is beyond you. Have you felt that way? You know, you have days where you just think, I really don't know how to cope with this. This one is really beyond me. And I don't know how to cope with their peer pressure. I don't know how to cope with the kind of friends they're making. I don't know how to cope with their bad attitudes. All these things are kind of like the enemy coming in. O our God, wilt thou not execute judgment upon them? For we are powerless against this great multitude that is coming against us. We do not know what to do, but our eyes are upon thee. And then it skips down to about verse 15. And it says, Thus says the Lord to you, Fear not, and be not dismayed at this great multitude, for the battle is not yours, but God's. And that's one of the things that I want us to remember this morning almost more than anything else, is the battle is not yours, but God's. Now, we have our homework. There are certain responsibilities that God has given to us to do in raising children. But remember that a good part of that responsibility is His too. And you know, there's nothing in the world that I can do to change the life of my child. I can train that child. I can pray for that child. I can try to expose that child to good influences. But there is nothing I can do to take that child's life and shape it and make that child a godly person. That is God's department. And then it goes on here. It says, Tomorrow go down against them. Behold, they will come up. No, let me skip here. It says, He tells them where to go down to go against the enemy here. And then he says, You will not need to fight in this battle. Take your position. Stand still and see the victory of the Lord on your behalf. And I love that part. I went through an experience last summer with our daughter that was very, very hard on both Jim and me. And I don't like to share details because I feel like it's a way of protecting our children. And you don't need the details, but just to give you a rough sketch of what it was. She went through a very rebellious time, and we did not know what to do with her. Jim and Valerie were just like that. She did not want his authority in her life. She did not like our standards. She was just in rebellion against us. She had some friends that we were upset about, alarmed about. And when we tried to talk to her, there was just this brick wall. We just got resistance, everything we tried to do. And it finally got so bad that really, at one point, we really thought that she might leave home, just run off. And I was devastated. I really was crushed. And I thought, Lord, what do I do? I mean, where have I gone wrong? What have I done wrong? We always do that, don't we? The first thing we do is, you know, where did I fail? And sometimes, you know, we need to take responsibility for things. But I was really crushed and didn't know what to do. And Jim and I decided that in order to break this thing, that we would have to not only pray, but to fast. And Jim had promised Jimmy that he would take him on a camping trip. And so he was in a dilemma. He said, I don't know what to do. I promised Jimmy. And I said, well, honey, go ahead and you take him on the camping trip because he has looked forward to this and, you know, we don't want to break our word and disappoint him. So you go with Jimmy on the camping trip for 3 days and I'll just stay here and I'll fast and pray for Valerie. And so they did, and I fasted and prayed. And, of course, Jim was praying in his heart the whole time that he was gone. But they came back, and just like that, God took that situation and just turned it around. Her attitude completely changed, and she came to us and she said, you know, Mom and Dad, I can see that the way I'm going, the route that I'm taking, is just a one-way street down. And she said, I'll ruin my life if I keep going this way. And she said, the friends that I've had are not good for me, and I see that. And she said, I've been thinking about this, and she said, would you send me to a Christian school? She said, I'll work, I'll help pay for it, I'll do anything if you'll send me to a Christian school. She said, I really don't want to go to Norman High School. She says, I really don't, if I go there, I don't think I'll make it. Well, I appreciated her honesty, I really did. And Jim and I decided that whatever it took, if it meant selling our house and renting, anything, that we would do that in order to help her. And I really believe it's worth it. It's worth it, any sacrifice, any price, to help our children to learn to walk with God. Well, as it happened, that wasn't necessary for us to do that. God kept about two steps ahead of us all year long. Our dog had puppies, and we sold the puppies, and that brought in some money, and just different things. There, you know, someone would send some money and just thought maybe we could use it. Just, it was amazing how God just provided, and we sent her away to a school. It was hard to send her away, but God very clearly opened the door for us to send her to that particular school. And her life just went. It was like from night to day. And she has grown so much this last year. It's been the best year of her life. And just to see what God could do in that situation really strengthened my faith more than ever. And I found myself thinking, you know, this has God's fingerprints all over it. It doesn't have mine. It has God's. And he stepped in and he did something that neither Jim nor I could do. We had kneeled down by her bed the night before she came to us. And just with tears, we just said, Lord, we're sorry for things that we've, maybe mistakes we've made, not intentionally, but things that we've done that we shouldn't have done. And we're sorry for anything that we have done that should have been done differently. But we don't know what to do. We're just here. We're just giving her to you. And you take her and use anyone, anything you can in order to bring her to yourself. We really thought at that point that our influence was through in her life, but it really wasn't. We just thought it was. And so when I say here that prayer will definitely shape our children to be Christ's men and women, although they will in varying degrees go through deep struggles in the process, I think we have to be willing to say to the Lord, Lord, whatever it takes for you to work in the life of my child, I am willing. It doesn't mean I'll always like it. It doesn't mean I'll enjoy it. But I want you to know that I'm willing for you to do whatever you need to do and just help me do my part. Okay, down here where it says, let's use a prayer list, I've mentioned five things here that we'll run through quickly. And then I'll give you just a couple of minutes to write down something. The first one, write down the child's name and list approximately 6 needs under the name. Now, there's nothing magical about the number 6. I just picked the number out of the air. Maybe it's 3 needs. Maybe it's 8. Maybe it's 1. I don't know. Whatever it is, let God speak to you and let it be something very specific, not a bless him type of thing. But Lord, it may be an attitude problem. It may be a lying problem. Whatever it is, just write it down very specifically. 2, number according to priority and circle or underline the crucial needs. And I do this when I make my lists out for the children. I usually draw a circle around the one that I want to really concentrate on the most, the one that is the heavy at that time with a big need. 3, ask God to show you which one or ones to focus on each day. Now, my own personal experience is that I went through a time when prayer lists to me were very confining, and I did not find it liberating. I found myself being very mechanical, and I asked God to show me what to do, and the thing he brought to my mind was as you look at that prayer list each day, ask me to show you which ones to focus on. And some days I'd pray for 1, 3, and 5, and then I'd pray for 2, and you know, it varied according to the need. And I really think that we can pray in the Spirit if we'll be sensitive to the Lord in this way and ask him to show us which ones to zero in on at the time. 3, ask God to show you you will find yourself revising this list from time to time as God answers prayer and reveals fresh needs. I like to keep my old prayer list for the kids. Every once in a while I make out a new one, and I like to file away the old one. And then maybe months or years later, I drag it out and I think, wow, I forgot about that. Wasn't that neat? You know, look what God did. 4, set aside a definite time and place each day and pray about these. If you don't set aside a definite time and place, you will really procrastinate if you're anything like me. I find it very easy to procrastinate. You know, there's just that one more load of laundry. I'll just stick that load in and then I'll have my quiet time. Then the phone rings. Well, all right, after I answer the phone, then I'll have my quiet time. Then something else happens, and on it goes. I find personally that the time that's best for me is early in the morning. Now, my daughter likes to do it at night just before she goes to bed, and that works out really well for her. But I think however you're put together, the main thing is to find a time and a place and then to stick with it. 5, be faithful. You may be the only link between your child and God. Now, I don't know if that would apply to anyone here or not, but I have spoken before to groups of women where I look out and I know there are several women there that really are the only link between their child and God. If they do not pray for that child, there really isn't anyone else that will. And we need to take our responsibility seriously in this. Now, down here where I have child's name and then the numbers, let's just take a few seconds and then just write down. You don't have to fill in all those, but just write down one or two things that God brings to your mind right now that you could pray for your child or your children. Maybe you've got more than 2 children. I just put those 2 down there. Okay, I'll let you add to that later. You'll probably get some other ideas that you'll want to incorporate too as we go on. But on the other side of your sheet, if you'll just turn it over, I've listed some examples, and there are more that we could add to this. I'm sure this is just to prime our thinking. But we'll kind of go down through this list, and then I'll open it up for some questions. The first one is a desire to know Jesus early in life. Psalm 63:1 says, O God, thou art my God, early will I seek thee. And one thing that Jim and I prayed for our 3 children was that they would have, that they would come to a place early in life where they would know Christ intimately. Now, I didn't know what the timetable would be, and here again, we can't dictate to God, can we, on these things. But I prayed that as early as possible that my children might come into an intimate relationship with Christ. And then as they went through their struggles later, I would have to remind myself, just a minute, you prayed. You know, let God carry on his process. He is bringing that child to the place where they really can know Christ. And they have to go through this process in order to get there. Isaiah 40, 54:13 says, "And all your children shall be taught of the Lord, and great shall be the peace of your children." And that's something that I have wanted very much for mine, that in their relationship to God there would be a real peace, that they would know Him that way. Number two, a desire to please Him. And 2 Corinthians 5:9 says, "So whether we are at home or away, we make it our aim to please Him." And I love that. I used to say, I'm going to make a plaque of that, and I'm going to frame it, and I'm going to hang it in my kitchen, but I never did get around to doing it. But I love that verse. Whether we are at home or away, we make it our aim to please Him. And I begin praying that for Rod and Val and Jimmy. Lord, I can't follow them around, seeing what they're doing and standing over them. I'm not supposed to do that. I trust You for that. But Lord, I really would like to pray for them, that whether they are here at home or they're away from home, that they would make it their aim to please You. It would be very important to them to learn to please You in their lives. And Valerie's been away from home this past year, but she shares very freely from her life, and some of the lessons that she's learned, some of the scriptures in the Word of God that have come alive to her, she shares these things. And you know, I found myself thinking many times, she's not at home now, she's away. But it really is her aim to please Christ. And her heart for the Lord just, you know, has just been a thrill to us. And God has done a unique work in her life. She's a challenge to me at times. Sometimes I hear her talking and I just think, boy, I needed to hear that. And I think it's neat when you can start learning from your own children. Okay, number three is a hatred for sin. And Psalm 45:7 says, "Because you have loved righteousness and hated wickedness, therefore God, your God, has anointed you with the oil of gladness beyond your companions." And I just found myself saying, "Lord, help our children to hate sin and to love righteousness." And You have to give them that hatred for it, Lord, because the way we're put together, we are naturally going to gravitate toward the wrong things, and they are naturally going to do that. It's kind of like A.W. Tozer said, "The bent of nature is toward the wild, never toward the fruitful field." Well, you know, if you've ever grown anything, you know that, don't you? You go outside and you think, you know, why do these weeds grow like this? I don't do anything to them, and look at them, they're just everywhere. And here's this little flower that I'm having to baby and fertilize and do all these things to, and you know, I just have to really work on it. But the weeds, no effort at all. And it's that way in their lives and our lives too, that the bent of nature is toward the wild, not toward the fruitful field. And that's the reason we have to pray more than ever, is to counteract that bent in order to bring that back in to God's ways. We need to pray that they will be caught when they sin. And that may sound funny to you, but boy, I could tell you some funny stories on that one. And ways that God has answered that prayer over the years. I will tell you just one. When we were over in Nairobi, Rodney was in, I guess he was in about the third grade. And we had high hedge around our home. And he never could figure out what was on the other side of that hedge. And he decided one day to climb over it. Somehow he got over the fence and through that hedge, and was in this man's yard, and the man saw him and came out, and he wanted to know what he was doing there. Well, Rodney just panicked, you know, and he said, "I'm lost." And the man said, "Well, here, let me take you home." And, you know, he was getting in thicker and thicker all the time. And he got in the car, and he'd say, "Well, I think it's down there." And they'd go down that block, and he'd say, "Well, it's over there." And they'd drive over there, and, "Well, I think it's that way." And he just had that man going all over the place. And finally, he got up to where it was close to our front, the front part of our house, where the front hedge was. And he slowed down, and Rodney jumped out of the car and ran in the yard. Well, the man got out of the car and ran after him. He was going to get at the bottom of this thing, you know, and find out what it was all about. And Rodney climbed a tree, and there was the man at the bottom of the tree when Jim drove up, looking up in the tree, you know, at Rodney. And so Jim got out and, you know, wanted to know what was going on. And the man says, "Well, I wish I knew." He said, "I'm trying to get this little boy back to his home. He said he was lost." And he said, "I can't." He said he just jumped out of the car and ran. And Jim says, "Well, it happens to be my son." And then they got Rodney out of the tree. And Rodney explained that he panicked and lied. you know, instead of just being truthful and saying, well, I climbed over the hedge into your yard, I'm sorry, I probably shouldn't have done that. He panicked and told a lie. Well, you tell one lie and you've got to tell another, don't you, to cover it up. And then you've got to tell another one to cover that up, and you just go on and on, and it gets worse and worse. And so he got caught, you know, just in little things like that, in lies. There have been several times where God has really just let us hear the right thing or be at the right place at the right time in order to catch that. And another time he stole a carrot from a neighbor's yard when we first moved there, and there was this long hedge, and he went around it, went to the garden, pulled a carrot. And the African that lived there saw him and started to chase him, and he ran back home, and he ran up in the house and threw the door open and jumped behind the couch and hid. And there I was standing watching this boy, wondering what he was doing. And I got him out, and when he calmed down, his face was just white. He was so afraid. When he finally calmed down, he told me what had happened. And so then, of course, I had to take him back around to the African and have him apologize and return the carrot. But, you know, it was just a little thing, wasn't it? What's a carrot? Well, a carrot's a big thing, really, when you think about a life and the character that God's trying to shape. So God just let him get caught. There have been umpteen other things, as there are with children. But it is a good way to pray for your children, that they will be caught. And Ecclesiastes 8:11 says, "Because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore, the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil." Boy, you don't get caught, and it's going to be a little easier to do it next time. And the pattern begins, doesn't it? Okay, pray for your children for protection from harm and from evil influences. Psalm 127:1 says, "Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain that build it." And we have to depend on God here to protect our children from evil influences. It is not something we cannot always be with them, as I mentioned before. We are in this world. We have to live in this world. We are going to encounter evil influences. There is no way around it. But I like the way that Jesus prayed in John 17, verses 9 and 15 for the disciples just the night before he was crucified. He said, "I am praying for them now, Father, I am not praying for the world, but only for those whom you have given me. I am not asking you to take them out of the world, but to keep them from the evil in it." You know, he knew that they were here in this world for a reason, with a job to do for him. And he wasn't saying, "Lord, just hedge them about and don't let anything ever touch them." But he says, "In the midst of this evil world, I want to ask you to keep them from the evil in it." And so this is how we've prayed for our children, that God would keep them from the evil in it. Now, he has let certain things happen over the years, and sometimes it has been difficult things. It's been things that I would have done anything to change at the time. But as I look back, God really has been the blessed controller of all things. Even in those hard times, those things that I would have changed if I could have, I can look back now and I can see that God used even that to mold and shape in our children's lives. And what can I say except, thank you, Lord, you really know what you're doing. Okay, we need to pray for responsible attitudes. In Daniel 6:3, it says, "Now this Daniel was preferred above the presidents and princes because there was an excellent spirit in him. Also the king thought to set him over the whole realm." He was so impressed with the spirit that he saw in Daniel, or the attitudes that he saw in his life, that he thought, "I'm going to really promote this man. He is special. He stands out among all the others that I have." And we need to pray about our children's attitudes. Another verse that we can pray regarding their attitudes is Galatians 5:22, which is the fruits of the Spirit: love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. And as the need arises, we can pray that. Another verse that I like in regard to responsible attitudes is Ezekiel 36:26. And this is a verse that I prayed at two different times for Rodney because I saw a hardness setting into his heart, and it really frightened me. And the first time I prayed it for several weeks, and God answered. There was a softening there, and I was aware that God had answered that prayer. And then about 3 or 4 years later, again, a hardness set in, and I thought, "Lord, here we go. You know, I'm going to take the same verse and I'm going to pray this again for him because you answered before and I know you will this time. Well, I had to pray longer that time. It wasn't just a few weeks, it was a couple of years that I had to pray, about 2.5 years. And the verse says, "A new heart also will I give you, and a new spirit will I put within you. And I will take away the stony heart out of your flesh, and I will give you a heart of flesh, a heart that is soft. You know, I'll take away that stony heart, and I'll give you a soft heart." And one time here in the Springs, Jimmy and I were in the car, and we were driving down a street that had a hill on it, and there was a boy on a bicycle right in front of us. And this boy was right in the middle of the lane, and he knew I was there. And I just kind of went like that on the horn, just enough to not frighten him, but just to let him know that I was there. And he turned around, and he shook his fist at me, and I don't know what he was saying. I'm awfully glad I didn't know. And he just turned around, and he just stayed right there, and he even slowed down. He went slower than he had been going. He knew I couldn't pass because there was a hill. So I just had to creep behind him in low gear until I got over the top of that hill and I could pass him. And when I got over the top, I turned to Jimmy. And by the way, I've asked God to show me daily lessons in life that I can apply a spiritual truth to in order to teach the children something important. So I turned to Jimmy and I said, "Honey, why do you think that boy did that?" And he says, "Well, Mom," he says, "I just think that he doesn't know Jesus, and he's just rebellious." And I said, "Well, Jimmy, what do you think is going to happen to that boy if he keeps on being that way?" Then he thought for a minute, and he says, "Mom, I think he might end up in prison." And I said, "You know, I think you're right." And I said, "You know, when Dad and I occasionally have to discipline you," I said, "why do you think we do it?" And he says, "I think you do it so I won't have to go to prison someday." Well, he was right, wasn't he? And like Ecclesiastes 8:11, because sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. And Jimmy went on to say that his mother must not love him very much because she didn't correct him. You know, she just let him be that way, so evidently she didn't love him very much. And I thought, that's probably true. Just along with this being responsible in our attitudes, I think that we need to teach our children to be quick to confess sin. And before we teach them that, we had better be doing that in our own lives. I don't know. I can't count the times that I have had to go to one or another of my children and apologize for something. And there's been many a time that Jim has too. And we'll have to go to them and say, "You know, the thing that we mentioned, you were wrong in that, but the way we handled it was not right. And we want to ask for your forgiveness." And Jim did that. I remember a situation a couple of years ago where he did that with Rod about 3 years ago, I guess. And he had really, really come on way too strong with Rodney. And so Rod went to his room and shut the door. And Jim told me afterwards, he says, "You know, the issue was right, but," he says, "my approach sure wasn't right." And then he went downstairs, and I heard him knocking on the door. And he went inside, and he told Rodney that. He says, "You know, the issue was right, but I handled it wrong." And he said, "I really want to ask your forgiveness, son." And so Rodney forgave him, and everything was okay again. But it can be really pride in our hearts that keeps us from doing this. We think, well, we're parents, we're in a position of authority, and we shouldn't have to apologize. And of course, nothing is further from the truth. I think no matter who we are, whether we're a Christian leader, whether we're a parent, whatever position we're in, that we are going to have to, we had better apologize from time to time when we do something wrong. And if we do, then we will teach others around us to do the same thing. If I do not go to my child and apologize when I'm wrong on something, I have had a wrong attitude, I have spoken more sharply than I should have, whatever it is, if I don't learn to go to my child and apologize, I will never teach that child to do the same. I'll teach them to make excuses and to cover up and to justify themselves. Okay, the next one is to pray that our children will be respectful of elders. I think this is important. I have a very, very difficult time in my own life with disrespect when I see it in a child, and especially in my own. It's been one thing that I just can't tolerate. I just think, I want to hear what you say. I want you to feel free to tell me whatever it is you feel and think, but to not do it disrespectfully. And I think we need to encourage our children to tell us if there's something about us that they don't appreciate or like, for them to tell us, but to teach them to do it under control too, and not in a temper tantrum, because they need to learn self-control in their lives. Okay, the next one, the right choice of friends. Proverbs 1, 10, and 15 says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent." And then 15, "My son, do not walk in the way with them." And I think we need to help our children in this area of their lives. There was even one time where our daughter had a girlfriend in the sixth grade, and I came to the conclusion that this girlfriend was not a good influence on her. And it's not that my daughter was doing all so well that time in her own life. There were things in her life that were wrong too. But I knew that the chemistry of those two together was not good. And I finally called Val aside and I said, "Honey, you may totally misunderstand my reason for doing this, but I really feel that Penny is not a good influence on you at this time. And I don't even know that you're a good influence on each other." And I said, "I'm just going to have to ask you to find another friend, but not to play with her anymore." And I really expected a reaction from her, because they had been just like that. But it was interesting. She looked at me and she says, "Yeah, you're right, Mom." She says, I really can't argue with that. I know you're right." And so that was the end of that relationship. But I thought to myself, I wish I'd done it sooner. I watched it for months, and I really should have done something about it sooner. Number 9, be sensitive. Pray that they will be sensitive to other people's needs and feelings. And here I think that if we're sensitive to their needs, and when they talk, we listen, that they are going to learn that from us. And then as we demonstrate as well as pray for them in this area, they'll pick this up. Philippians 2:4 says, "Let each of you look not only on his own interests, but also on the interests of others." And Romans 15:2-3 says, "Let each one of you please his neighbor for his good in order to edify him, for even Christ did not please himself." And there have been times, I'm sure with you too, where my children have not had my attention, and I stand there and I'm doing something in the kitchen and they're talking and they know I'm not really listening. I try to pretend that I am, but I have my mind on this other thing that I'm doing. And God has convicted me of that several times in the past and just reminded me that the day is going to come. If you don't listen to them, they're not going to listen to you either. And when you have their attention now, you'd better take advantage of it. You'd better listen carefully. Okay, we need to pray that they'll be more influenced by Jesus than by their peers in the world. They are going to be influenced by their peers in the world. I mean, it is just going to happen. But we need to be praying for them, because this is such a terribly vulnerable area these days. We might also want to ask ourselves what influences they are having in the way of positive influences. In other words, the church that you go to, are their needs really being met in that church? What is your church like? Is it really meeting needs in their lives? If not, are they in a Christian school where some of those needs are being met? It may be that God would have you take steps in one of those two directions. But just to be open, nobody can stand up and say, "You should put your children in a Christian school." You can't do that. It may not be the thing for you. It may not be right. But on the other hand, it may be something to consider. I know as we look back over the years, we really wonder if we should not have done that in our situation. And I think if we had it, I know if we had it to do over again, we would in our particular situation. So it is something just to consider. Romans 12:2 says, "Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind." And we need to pray that God will transform the thinking of our children just renew their thinking and help them to see things from His perspective. Help them to want to please Him in their lives, to want to understand His Word and grow through it. And we need to pray for an open and teachable spirit. And Hebrews 13:17 says, "Obey your leaders and submit yourselves, for they are watching for your souls as they that are going to have to give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with sorrow, for that would be unprofitable for you." And in our own lives, we need to be open and teachable. I have from time to time asked one of my children, "Is there anything in my life that you have observed that you really think I need to work on? An attitude or some habit or something that you... I want you to feel free to tell me now. Just because I'm your mother doesn't mean you can't, you know, share things with me that you think I need." And they've done that. They're very faithful to do that when you give them the opportunity. And I remember one time Valerie told me, she says, "You know, Mom," she says, "you get so busy doing things." She says, "You just kind of get like that. And you get so involved in what you're doing at your desk or somewhere around the house." And she said, "Sometimes I feel lonely." And she says, I'd like to talk to you, but I don't want to interrupt you because you seem so busy." And I just thought, boy, Lord, thank you for letting her say that to me. And help me now to not burrow into what I'm doing, not to get so involved that I lose my sensitivity to my children. And, you know, there are times that we need to just kind of hang loose, just be in the kitchen when they come home and ask a few questions and just be available and give them the impression that they are more important to us than our do list. They're more important to us than that desk work. And they'll figure that out themselves, too. Okay, we need to pray that our children will develop their own convictions increasingly as they grow older. And I love that story in John 4:42 where Jesus was with the woman at the well. And she went back in town and gathered up some men in town. She evidently had a lot of men friends, but not women friends because of the way she'd been living. And she brought them out to hear Christ. And after they heard Jesus, they turned to her and they said, "Now we believe, not because of what you have said, but because we have seen him for ourselves." And Jim and I read that several years ago and thought about that, and we thought, you know, this is what we're going to pray for our children, that someday they would say to us, you know, "Now we believe, not because of what you have said, Mom and Dad, but because we have seen him for ourselves. We have our own convictions because God has given them to us. We haven't just tacked yours on to our lives, but we really believe ourselves." Let me just skip on. I'm not going to mention all these verses. The next one, learning to be a witness. This is a good thing to pray for your children, that they will have a heart to witness to their friends. It's not an easy thing. I have known very few children who go through junior high and high school that really do this. I don't know about you, but they're almost like a rare bird, aren't they? It is very, very difficult to them because they don't want to stand out and be different. But I think we need to pray this for our children. Now, our son is 19 right now, and it's just been the last year and a half that he has been concerned about witnessing. Before then, his own life wasn't right, you know, and he couldn't handle that. But we didn't preach to him about that. We just have prayed this for our children over the years. By the way, I don't know about you, but I really try to be careful not to preach to my children. Now, there are some times where I think later, "You preached." But I really think that that'll turn them off very quickly if you preach to them. You can ask questions. Questions are a really good way to get information and to give input. You can ask questions and you can draw them out. And you can even say a few things here and there, but you have to be careful not to preach to them, lest you lose your audience. Okay. Acts 22:15 says, "You will be... and you shall be his witness unto all men of what you have seen and heard." And Acts 4:13 says, "Now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, and they perceived that they were unlearned and ignorant men, they marveled and they took knowledge of them that they had been with Jesus." And these are just some verses on witnessing. Our son right now is working for an oil company down in Oklahoma. And he's working with what they call roughnecks, and believe me, they are. They really fit the description. But it is a very rough bunch of men. And he's had a few opportunities to witness. And he finally decided that one way he could witness would be to get a t-shirt and have some writing printed on the back of it. He saw another one like that. And so he took it down to the shop and had them print on the back of it, "Another life changed by Jesus Christ." So he wears that all around as he works. And that's one of his ways of witnessing. But that's good. You know, he is taking a stand and he's witnessing and he's learning more and more to witness verbally. He's moving into the dormitory at Oklahoma University this fall. And the reason why he's moving out of our home and into the dormitory is so that he can have opportunities to get to know students around him, become friends with them, and then witness in a natural way to them as he gets to know them. So they're learning. Okay. Number 14, we need to pray about their future mates. Have you ever thought about this? You know, it was quite a while before I started thinking about that. But we need to pray that someday the one that God has for our child will be his selection and that it will be just right for that child. 2 Corinthians 6:14 says, "Be not unequally yoked together with unbelievers. For what fellowship has righteousness with unrighteousness, and what communion has light with darkness? For you are the temple of the living God, as God has said, 'I will dwell in them and walk in them, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people.'" And then Amos 3:3 says, "Can two walk together except they be agreed?" You know, when you're in love, you really see the other person through rose-colored glasses. But marriage is the stark reality. That is where the pretense is gone. Things are like they really are. Attitudes show up. The different ways of looking at things. Relationships with God. All these things become reality then. And we need to pray that God will, first of all, help our child to be a child who loves God and walks with God, and then that God would provide a mate for our child that has those same convictions in their lives. Let me just read this part on the bottom here, and then we'll have some questions. "The above will not be produced in your child's life overnight, but rather through a process of many years. Be sure your own life is an example. Admit it and ask for forgiveness when it is not. And be content with a little progress at a time. There will be times when there is no progress at all. Believe him, and in time you will reap the results of your prayers." And I think the idea of being content with a little progress at a time is good too. Sometimes we can be so idealistic that we really get ahead of God with our children. Does anyone want to add to this, or do you have any questions or input? Maybe there's something that some of you have done that has been a help in raising your children or in praying for them, and you'd like to mention that at this point to help the rest of us. Yes, uh-huh.
I would like to say about praying for a mate. I have a daughter who is 30, and she got to be 29, and this man had come along, and I've been praying for a long time. A very special man had come along for her. And before she met him, her main love was her cat. And one day she lifted him up and she says, "Mom, this might be the only grandchild you ever have." God provided this young man, and after they met, well, they met because he was looking for a church, and he felt he even had some Bible study, and so she directed him to a friend, and then she was wondering, you know, was it really committed, and really should she even be dating him? Some people say you shouldn't even date a non-Christian. And I think that's a matter maybe not translation, but not to be said so in the Bible. And when he came to the place where he decided that the main thing he had to do was decide whether he should make this commitment or not, and that was the most important thing for him.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we were all praying for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the first thing he did, was make this commitment. And after that, they were soon engaged and married, and it's because of them that I'm here. They've been here for 2 years now.
Good.
So God provided this very special young man, and as I said many times, he was even more special than he needed to be. And I'm going to get Brandon in February.
Oh, and it's not a cat. That's good. Thank you. Well, we need to... Do you know, I don't know about you, but I run into so many people that take this so lightly, this idea of praying that God would give your child a Christian mate. It's kind of like, well, whoever you fall in love with, it's kind of like God doesn't enter into that area. Do you know what I mean? I just run into this over and over again, and then you see the results of that, and it's really a heartbreak.
Thank you for allowing us the privilege of ministering to you by way of this cassette. You can multiply this ministry by sharing this cassette with someone else.